Hello, good evening, and welcome to the afternoon drive here on the most powerful name in talk, Power 102.1 FM. As you know, we start in the afternoon and we finish in the evening. Usually, I always say, once you hear me starting the show, you know what that means. Mr. Thomas just isn't here as yet, but he may come in the next few minutes or so. But until he does, we always say the show has to go on, and so it will. Today, we have a guest in studio. 5 o'clock, we'll be having the next one. You know how it goes sometimes. Today, we have one of our senior professionals in this country, someone whom we view as one of the shapers of our society. You hear him on all matters. Yeah, of course, you know, people in the Chamber of Commerce, they see themselves as the leading people in the country. And then you have other people, Mr. Our guest today, form part of that circle too.
He might be a mover, I don't know if he's a shaper.
No. What they do influence policy. And I'm sure he's too decent and polite to agree to it. I understand that. Our guest today is no other than the wonderful and dynamic and sharp thinker, Mr. Afra Raymond. How are you, sir?
Thank you for having me on this show. It's Drive Time Presentation on Power 102. Mr. Nore and colleagues and listeners, thanks for listening. And it's good to be introduced in that flattering manner. But hopefully I could do some credit to the matter we want to discuss. And I think the idea is to discuss the CL financial bailout.
Yeah, that's the topic. That is the main thing
that you want to address this evening, you know?
Yeah. I saw you did this piece in the paper some time ago. CL financial bailout, bitter brew.
Bitter brew, yeah.
My takeaway from reading this to begin with is that, and I don't have a problem with my takeaway at all, is that you have the view that the company in its entirety, CL Financial, should not be returned to the people who caused what we all know so well in relation to our economy, the 20-something billion dollar bailout,
yes,
and so on.
Yeah.
Where did I go wrong in my interpretation?
No, I think that's correct. I don't think the company should be returned. Or the companies, it's a group of companies, should be returned to those individuals, those original shareholders.
Yeah.
And the principle being, we go back to first principles, one of the principles of the legal system we operate in,
right,
is that in fact a wrongdoer should not benefit,
right,
from the fruits of their wrongdoing,
right.
So in fact, if indeed CL Financial is fatter or healthier or more attractive to those people, and they are now ready to re-enter, they're now ready to take back what they couldn't handle back in 2009, I don't think that is something we should be contemplating lightly. And I've put it as a series of questions for the current administration. That would include the Prime Minister, Dr. Rowley, the Finance Minister, Mr. Colin Burt, the current Central Bank Governor, Dr. Alvin Hillier. I signed an open letter,
right,
together with two colleagues to the Governor of the Central Bank on the 31st of January on the same topic. That in fact, good sense tells us that those people cannot regain control of those financial companies.
Right.
And let us be quite clear, the Central Bank runs a series of regulations, they administer a series of regulations called the fit and proper regulations, and the purpose of those regulations is to make sure that people who are of a certain character, people who have had a certain kind of experience following them in their professional career, should not be in charge of, they should not be in the direction or the control of a financial institution. And that includes directors, officers, actuaries, and controlling shareholders. Okay? The Central Bank made a press release, Mr. Nore, on the 7th of July 2011, which set out in some detail,
right,
that they had launched a lawsuit against Mr. Andre Montay and Mr. Lawrence Dupree and some other companies that Mr. Montay and Mr. Dupree controlled that were leading elements in the CL financial story. And in that press release, the Central Bank made it abundantly clear that the lawsuit was because of a detailed forensic examination they had carried out. The lawsuit was to recover money that, as far as they were concerned, had been wrongly applied in terms of how the company was run. The company was run in terms of poor governance. Right. And that, in fact, if the Central Bank itself, as the regulator, could come to that formal position to the point of filing a formal lawsuit and publishing an advertisement in the press, why haven't they used the fit and proper regulations,
right,
to strike off those gentlemen? And we wrote to the governor of the Central Bank on the 31st of January, two or three weeks ago, we wrote to the governor of the central bank and said to him that in fact that is an order of a first order of business. Things have changed since June of 2011, well then I think he needs to tell the public how things have changed. Is it that we now realize we were in error, and that in fact these are the sorts of people we want running our financial system? Right. It's a very serious question. The other people who signed that letter with me were my colleagues David Walker, who's a chartered accountant, retired from the City of London, now returned to Trinidad and Tobago, a brother, Trinbagonian, and the transparency group called Disclosure Today, which has been run by Margaret Rose and Rishi Maharaj and Justin Phelps and some of the other colleagues there, interested in the same issues of transparency and good governance. Right. So we signed a letter to Governor Alvin Hilaire. We haven't had a response, but one of the main points we made was that fit and proper must be applied to these people, and if it's applied, they can't get control of those companies.
Help our listeners to understand why you have the view that they won't be able to get past that fit and proper test. Because you know, for example, this was done. People know what it caused the country in terms of how people felt. There was a run, and I think it was a Clico, and they couldn't meet. Government had to bail them out. But I think somewhere in here where I read, you sort of compare them to what went on with this gentleman who's now in jail.
Wall Street.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I think that what we need to make clear, Richard, and that's a good question, what we need to make clear is that what has happened in Trinidad and Tobago is huge.
Right.
To begin with, the Wall Street bailout was estimated to cost people have been irresponsibly comparing Wall Street with our own bailout in Trinidad and Tobago. The Wall Street bailout cost about 1% of America's GDP. Gross domestic product is the entire output of the American economy over a financial year, a fiscal year.
Say 1 year.
So it's 1 year, correct. So 1% of that was the cost of the American bailout, what we call Wall Street bailout.
Right.
Our bailout cost between 10 and 13%.
Which was high.
10 to 13 times more than the Americans. Yeah. And yet there are still people who will try to convince people in Trinidad and Tobago it's the same thing, it's not the same thing.
No, in terms of...
It was a huge company that had grown immensely, and the fact that the company was in trouble had already overshadowed a lot of parts of the economy. The other thing is that the money that was lent to the American companies when they were bailed out by the Treasury in America, that money that was lent to the American banks and financial institutions and so was lent at a very high rate of interest.
Okay.
In the case of AIG, which at the time was the world's biggest insurance company, AIG was one of the biggest institutions to fail. Right. AIG used to be here as Algico. Algico was like the local brand of AIG, okay? When AIG was bailed out, they had to sell 85% of their shares, and they had to pay interest that was nearly four times more than the market rate. Here in Trinidad and Tobago, Mr. Dupree and Mr. Montai kept their shares, which is why we could be facing a situation now where they're making proposals for this and proposals for that, because the gentlemen kept their shares. They were allowed to keep their shares. And we lend them the money. I worked it out. In that article, I said zero, but I've corrected that now. I've worked it out.
No,
we lend them the money at less than 1% interest.
Okay.
Which is, I don't know anybody listening on the radio who ever got any serious amount of money to borrow at 1%. But I don't know anybody.
Right.
But the wealthiest people in the Caribbean could get to borrow that amount of money at 0%.
Yeah.
At 0%. Yeah? How are you doing? And those are some of the differences that we need to be aware of, understanding this thing going forward. The other thing is that our financial regulators have themselves made a declaration that the situation is so serious to them that they're putting them in court.
Right.
That is enough to strike them out of any further qualification going forward, you know?
Yeah. So the stimulus program that happened in America is very different, you are saying, in a sense, to what transpired. Let's go to the Commission of Inquiry. They have never made the document from the Commission of Inquiry public.
Well, in fact, let's stop a second. Let us make a point clear. It's important to understand these points.
Yeah.
There was one Commission of Inquiry, and the Commission of Inquiry was into two things.
The
first thing was the CL Financial Group that failed. And the second thing was the Hindu Credit Union.
Right.
The Hindu Credit Union part of the Commission of Inquiry, the Hindu Credit Union report was 384 pages long and was published on the 16th of July 2014.
Okay.
It was published. It was published the day Kamala Prasad Bisesa received it.
Right.
she received it from the president the same day he received it. The president is the Honorable President Kamona.
Right.
Okay. The report into CL Financial, we don't know how long it is. We do know it was received by President Kamona on the 22nd of June last year.
Right.
And I think he passed it to Dr. Rowley, who was the Prime Minister, the same day.
Right.
And Rowley and his colleagues passed it to the DPP, Mr. Gaspard, for his opinion and so on. And they looked at it. But they have not published it.
Did they have a duty of care to the citizens, knowing that it was our money that bailed out CL Financial, to make the document public, given also that it was our money that funded the Commission of Inquiry?
Well, I think that the Commission of Inquiry report must be published. Right. So I agree with you. I would say that they do. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that is my opinion.
Right.
And those gentlemen that I named, they are in power. I'm not in power. I'm merely on power one or two. I'm not in power. So in fact, they have the influence and the power to decide they're not doing this or they're doing that.
Right.
But I would like to say that in fact, the purpose of a commission of inquiry is to conduct a lawful process of inquiry into something that is of high public concern, that the public wants to know about, and they didn't know about it before you had an inquiry. Right. It is funded by the public. It is taking place under an umbrella of laws. And to me, it seems logical and sensible that the report must be published. Because it can't be that you have all of those things in a line and then the report is put in a drawer, like so many other commissions of inquiry.
I had an interest myself to find out what this was about, because listening to the commission of inquiry, I saw where someone had a check for about $6 million in a drawer.
Yes.
People were showing up. I mean, Mr. Botiwari himself, he was on the stand.
Correct.
And he said, and when he left there, in other words, he implied that things were so out of control. He went and he spoke, I think, to the president and several other persons. And
yes,
I wanted to see closure brought to this
exactly
matter.
It would have been good to see what were the findings. Because my own impression, I attended many of the hearings in the Coleman inquiry. My own impression was that, in fact, Sir Anthony Coleman, he was a single gentleman doing the inquiry, English guy. He was 73 or 74 years old. But my own impression is that he wasn't fooled.
Right.
Very sharply, at particular points in the proceedings, he let us understand that he understood exactly what was going on.
Right.
With a particular kind of humor he has.
Right.
He let us understand. He would say, well, I don't want to make a joke, but so and so and so and so. Everybody would understand. Okay, he understands what the story is. So he's somebody, I think, who was able to grasp the fullness of it. He didn't have enough time, being a single commissioner, to probe everything. But the things he did probe, I think he got the meaning of it. I'd have loved to have seen his report. And I think we need to see it. Because the question here, going into this go-over season economically, with oil and gas prices and us looking for some new directions for our economy, the question really is, have we learned the lessons from it? Have we put things in place to stop it happening again? Is there another situation like that could be around the corner? These are the things we'd like to know as citizens.
I saw where CL Financial, the team there, they're in a position to pay off the government now.
Well, I don't know. Is that true? Or is that just what they say?
So, no, they have this accounting firm. When I read it,
yes,
they said that they were taking a standard and not getting the name just soon. It'll come to me shortly.
Yes.
But they are saying who is representing the people there, that they're in a position, because what was on the paper was an offer to the government.
Yeah.
Where they were paying about 97% in cash.
Yeah.
And the other 3% would have been in land.
Well, what I read, I mean, it's, you read so many different things.
Yeah.
At a fundamental level, we don't know what we don't know. There was, what I read was that in fact they had offered to pay back this money, is 97% in cash and so. But they were offering to pay back after they got the company back.
I think it was Price Waterhouse.
Could be.
They are the ones,
but they offered to pay back after they got the company back.
Mm-hmm.
And that is now raising an untenable situation of you lending somebody some money and you holding something until they pay you back the money. And you give them back the something and they will give it to you in 60 days time or 90 days time. Would any bank do that for the normal man? And the answer is no. Mm-hmm. It don't really happen so. But the rules are being bent. We are in a kind of we are the edge of the universe here. The other thing we need to understand, Mr. Norrie, is that in fact we don't know how much money is involved.
Yeah. Let's just assume from what I read with Price Waterhouse, I think they're looking at, I think it's around $19 billion.
Well, is it 19? Let me tell you why.
No,
let me tell you why I doubt that.
When I read the document, it's saying where they paid some already, they paid back about $6 billion in cash.
Mm.
And the difference is about $19 billion. And that out of that 19, they're going to pay about 97% in cash and the other 3% in land. And my thinking is, if the government is strapped for money at this time and they are offering to pay back the government, could the a seeming hesitation from the government be that they too are troubled like you in terms of where the company should go after they release it?
Yeah, well, I don't want to try to guess what the government's mind is. What I will say to you is that, I mean, they have their spokesman and people like Imbert and Dr. Rowley and them, they could explain themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying to you that what the actual amount of money is in question. I'll give you a couple of examples. So the figure you just mentioned is 19 point something. I was talking last week, no, 2 weeks ago, with a particular person who is very strong on the Clico thing. Somebody's always in the media. I ain't going to call the name. The name doesn't matter. Always on the media, almost as much as me. And that person said to me on the phone, Afra, what is this 19 billion you're talking about? The real figure is only 9 or 10. Well, I got so angry with him. I said, how do you mean the real figure is 9 or 10?
Mm-hmm.
He said, the rest of that is just cooked up figures. It's only 9 or 10 billion dollars, Ellen Dupree.
Mm-hmm.
He very strong on that, eh?
So these people are not changing their ways at all.
He very strong on that, eh? So I said to him, but I don't understand you. I am in
these
court.
These people that they're changing their clothes and they're not changing their ways at all.
Hold on. I am in court to try and get the details of the bailout. You wouldn't support me in court. But you come privately and you're telling me the real figure is half. I said, but what kind of thing is this? The person knows who it is. I'm not sure they listen to this. They know very well who they are. But then it could go further. Forget me and that person. Mr. Imbert.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking at the post-cabinet briefing, 28th of April, 2016.
Mm-hmm.
It's on video, it's on YouTube and so forth. Mr. Imbert himself is saying that the shareholders group came and told him a figure 19 something.
Right.
But when he is looking at certain figures, he is seeing 24 to 25. So I am saying to you, Mr. Norrie, as I said, I don't want to get into what is the PNM's thinking, what's the government thinking. That is for them. They have their people to talk. I am not doing that. I am saying the figure is not even certain. Sometimes you read that, you will see 19. Sometimes you will see 26. Sometimes another man I was talking to, the man with no name, he would tell me 9 or 10. What
but
is the real figure? And until
like
we get...
Pricewaterhouse is claiming to be in there and they put out a figure. Their credibility will be in the line based on what they do. If they're saying that is it reasonable to accept their position in terms of their figure?
I'm just saying everything needs to be checked carefully.
No,
you have to remember...
Triangulate your information to make sure you get it right.
But I'm saying try to remember that Pricewaterhouse's clique was auditor when the company got in a problem. So there's always that question hanging there in terms of, was there a mistake? Was there an oversight? Was it something that was just a genuine thing? Or was it somebody who was giving them wrong information? The fact about it is that we, and I'm speaking as a member of the citizenry who pay my taxes, it's not a party political thing. We have to make sure that whatever figure we are being given has been well and properly checked before we accept any deal to sign off anything.
Nice.
That's what I am saying.
No, I think you're right.
That's my position.
Because that is at the end of the day, Thomas is refunding that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of us, people won't understand the extent of this conversation. Some people, you know. But at
which
the end of the day, it's our money.
Which is where I want to come in. And I really do. Because, I mean, I am an educated man, but I'm afraid that matters of finance.
No, you are heavy entrenched in law.
But
I'm
saying
exactly
that history, some matters of finance would give me some difficulties, as I imagine a lot of people listening. So, Afra, could you just like summarize in quite, and I tell you, a lot of people out there know something went wrong. And I think I'd want to talk for them because I'm in that position. We know something went wrong. We suspect that Clico machinated the assistance it have been getting for a long while. And we suspected that as laymen because one organization can't have a party's treasurer and a next person who have the ear of the leader of the party. So we know that these fellas, so when I hear this Pricewaterhouse thing, if these fellas was able to machinate governments, I mean, what is Pricewaterhouse?
Yeah.
So we know something, but if you could just put it in a nutshell for the layman.
Okay, let me give you a
story. To understand what is happening out there, I think a lot of us would be happier for it.
You know, they have a book. The biggest American financial disaster before Wall Street was a company they call Enron.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Enron was a classic, it was an energy company that did a lot of financial trading and thing. And it was a classic collapse. And the biggest, the most famous book about Enron, about Enron, the title of the book was The Brightest Men in the Room. Okay. So in fact, they had this kind of joke that Enron used to go along to all the big campuses and the big universities in America, hire the 10 brightest people.
Okay.
For years. And when they went anywhere to make a presentation, London, Brussels, Africa, anywhere they went to make a presentation, and when they were finished talking, everybody's looking at everybody else and say, well, those are the brightest guys in the room. The men who just finished talk. Nobody else could talk after them and so on. So you have a kind of a way that what we were being sold in terms of Clico was an impossible dream. On the one hand, you have a society where people, because of where we are as a society, people don't feel comfortable in the masses to make an investment on the stock exchange or to buy bonds or to do trading with currency swaps and saying they don't feel comfortable that the society is not that financially sophisticated. Therefore, you have people who want a simple thing they can understand. At the same time, you have a high level of cash tied up in instruments with low levels of interest. So you have the money in the normal banks, the Scotiabank and the FCB and the Royal and so on, at very low interest. And then the third ingredient now, you have an individual like Mr. Dupree and his crew who are ambitious. They have ambitions to take CL Financial to a new place. So they craft instruments that satisfy two or three things at the same time. So the instruments give the investor the comfort, the belief, you could use what word you want. They give the investor the comfort, the belief, the impression that in fact what you're buying is a fixed deposit at 9%.
Higher than the banks.
Yeah, the bank might have been 3.5%.
Yeah.
But I will sell you that fixed deposit for 9%. Or we call it an EFPA, so it is meant the word retirement and thing is mentioned. But of course it's only for 1 year. So who invests for 1 year to retire? But anyway, it's just part of the smartness. Okay, or you create instruments where in fact you are giving people something that looks simple, but it's a lot, it have a lot more gravy than what's normally in the market. People start to take their money out of the boring old Scotiabank and Republic Bank and Royal Bank and FCB Bank and put it here. You take that money, which you have put into a boring financial instrument, and you are now investing that in risky things, whether it was energy, whether it was to buy the rum company in Jamaica, to buy the brandy company in France, to buy the 6,000 acres in Florida, the methanol plant worked very well. So you're making a wide range of investments internationally.
The Tobago jazz.
Correct. You're making a wide range of investments internationally. Out of that pool of money that people have placed with you in instruments that appear to be quite normal.
Okay.
So that's a kind of a painting a picture of what happened.
Yes.
Now, what that means is this. People have put things, people have put their faith or their trust in a particular arrangement because they thought or they were told that they were safe.
Okay.
And I pause there because, you know, all of us listen to this show, most of the people listen to this show, everybody in this room is big people and they have things that you hear as a big person. And while the person is saying it to you, some other part of your brain is saying, well, you know, that is not really so. We know that. They're all big people. So you must know that if Scotiabank is paying 2.5% and Republic is paying 2.75% and FCB Bank is paying 3% and Royal Bank is paying 2.8% and a man come and tell you he offer 9.5% with no risk.
Yeah, then you should sir.
You must pause as a big person. Okay. So you see, it's an interesting thing now, you see?
Yeah, no, accept it because...
It's interesting.
If Royal is 2.5, Scotia is 2.3.
Everybody that runs 2.5 to 3.
Yeah, it's not to say one is 5, one is 2, one is...
No, it is consistent.
So you move away from the normal mark and you went way... Yeah.
And you expect...
Yeah.
What you interest rate that should be existing, which is what the lay of the land is in terms of from among those financial institutions.
Yes.
And then to jump out of that and go to someone else who offering you three times that.
Yes.
You understand what I'm saying? A reasonable person should.
But I want to ask, was it that the investment portfolios that they designed failed or were managed by unscrupulous people?
Well, it's a bit of both in my opinion. On the one hand,
and I ask you that on the background when I see Angostura developing the Tobago plantations.
Well,
most of the people who own the house there his people working in the same Angostura and Clicquot.
Yeah, well,
so in other words, they develop it for themselves. You know, so you know that project clearly made no sense, quite frankly.
It's a bit about if you look at the press release, the governor of the central bank at the time, it was a gentleman called Ewart Williams. Mm-hmm. The governor of the central bank made a press release on the day of the bailout. That was Friday, the 30th of January, 2009. And in that press release, on the first page, Governor Ewart Williams listed the same question you're asking. What are the reasons all this happened?
Okay.
He's answering the question for the public. And there are five reasons he gives. And two of the reasons he gives is what you're talking about. One of them is you have a mismatch in investment profiles. So you're raising money on short-term instruments that pay a very high rate of interest, but the thing you're investing in is long term. So you may be investing in something like methanol or real estate that takes 10, 12, 15 years to get a return.
Okay.
But you're borrowing money, which is what you do when you take a deposit. You're borrowing money. You're borrowing money at 1 year.
Okay.
So you had a fundamental level of risk because you're mismatched.
Okay.
So that's the first thing. The second thing was that, in fact, there's a lot of what they call intercompany transactions. Now, what intercompany transactions really refer to is the fact that Clicquot would have taken in all this money as insurance.
Yes.
And then now made a loan to CL. That will then
back to Angostura.
Right. And it's a whole circle going so.
And perhaps when people come to the money in a year's time, they will borrow back from a company.
And then,
but you hope that too many people will come at the same time.
Do we reconcile that with Neil and Massey? Because I remember as a young person working with them. Neil Coe would do all the work, and then they had Neil Coe Airlines, and in other words, they did a lot of intercompany business. But I am not aware that they ended up as South CL Financial.
I don't know.
It must mean the human.
Yeah, there was a human element.
Could they argue, Afra, that they were, if I could use the term, investment portfolio? They were broadening it.
Well, they could argue that, but the difficulty you would have is this.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you really get down to, like what I was doing just now when I was doing my hand like this.
Yeah.
You get a philosophical question.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, you have a public. If you tell the public you're selling shares in this, you may get trouble to get people to buy the shares.
Right.
Okay.
Because people don't want to buy any shares. But if you tell them that an insurance agent coming to see you and you have children going to college just now, and you should buy insurance.
And in
you may quicker get an audience, and you may quicker get a person to take money out of the bank and put it in something that has an insurance company name on it. Even though that same pool of money is being used to fund the same thing. So there's a question.
The funds that are raised from issuing shares, they take it the same way in a different
way. From issuing insurance policy.
Well, you made a valid point earlier on what they do to us.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me personally, I remember we just discussed this off here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have a daughter now in UAE, I have relatives, I in Trinidad, not a home where I could call a doctor now in Scarborough Hospital. And the only insurance I'm really interested in is the one for the car, you know, for a car, because if you don't have one, you'll get locked up.
You're in problems.
And that is only because of what happened with Clicquot, you know. So you're just not sure what happened, but you know that from the time you hear the word insurance, do pray. Harry, watch if you hear some names, you just get a cold, weird feeling about doing anything.
Yeah.
Afra, so, could you tell us, what's a Ponzi scheme?
What a Ponzi? Ponzi is actually a real person. Eh? And what Ponzi is...
But I know, but it's his scheme.
Yes.
Give it that name,
What Ponzi is that, in fact, you have, and we've had them in Trinidad before, we call them pyramids. They used to call them pyramids back in the 80s and thing. What you have is a situation where you promise something incredible.
Right.
So you promise somebody that, in fact, if you put this money with me and you bring two members, I could give you three times the amount of money in a month's time.
Right.
And all kinds of crazy things like this.
Something that came out of something like network marketing.
Yes, something like that. And you have people who are effectively trapped in a situation. The only way for them to get money is to bring more people in.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And at the bottom of all of this, because as I say, we're dealing with a kind of psychological thing, and the bottom of all of this is the desire, and it is very popular in some circles in the society to portray it as if it is only to do with the poorer class. The desire to get something for nothing. The something for nothing issue is not only concerning you, PNC PEP.
No, it's from
the something for nothing issue is at the center of this thing.
Yeah.
So people want to get 9.5% with no risk And ask me if that is not something we're not doing. Yeah. You understand me now?
Clearly, yeah. Okay,
if
yes.
you have no
so risk, in fact, yes, in
it,
fact,
it's almost a, there's, that is less than a calculated yeah. risk, yeah.
And the point I want to make, because with I made a point earlier on before yeah. you came in, Mr. Thomas, the point I want to make is that I was talking about the reason that the fit and proper rules need to be applied. Yes. We need to be sure that this doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
Let me share something with you all. This problem about unrealistic investments is not a joke. Eh? I had a case, and it's not me having a case. I observed something in the papers. It used to be in the Express on the editorial page about 2 or 3 years ago, an advertisement that was advertising a particular investment. And I said to myself, something is wrong with this. And you know what I found?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read it for you all. Because it matters, eh? Mm-hmm. Act on Investments, the SEC, which is our Security and Exchange Commission, put out an advertisement talking about Act on Investments. And I want you to understand how ridiculous it is. Act on Investments, here it is. No, I can't open it, I don't have the internet. Act on Investments is offering to pay people 10 times the amount of money in 14 days. I want to hear what they're saying, you know.
Like 4 days?
Listen, and all it had was the name of the company and a digicel number on the Express editorial page. The SEC put out an advertisement about it to tell people that it's foolishness, that company not registered with us, thing. And the burning question for me, because the SEC was doing its job, they were warning the public.
Yeah.
That's correct and proper. I congratulate them. But you know the burning question for me? I wonder how much millions they raised. Because Trinidadians are very gullible in this
sense. Of course they are.
And in fact, you will tell a man something that in fact makes no sense.
But it makes sense.
And you know something? Him. You will catch a few, eh?
Yeah, it makes sense to them.
You will catch a few.
It must, but look, yeah. They have something that's beyond the internet. You have your grandmother died in Africa.
We should.
And so you must send $2,000 to get $80 billion. Yeah. That is your inheritance she left for you. And you have people foolishly doing it. And
sending that money.
Yeah, so clearly I think they realize we are gone.
So I think that we need to be really important to understand Mr. Norrie and Mr. Thomas. Yeah. We need to understand very clearly that this is a matter where our public trust is in question. Our public money, about $25 billion is the best estimate I have. And I am going to tell you why I say it's the best estimate. Because I said the numbers were not certain.
I know,
you have 1 minute.
Yeah.
On the 3rd of April 2012, Mr. Yeah. Vincent Dukoran did an affidavit for the High Court. Mr. Mm-hmm. Vincent Dukoran was the Minister of Finance at the time.
Yeah.
And Mr. Dukoran told the High Court, under oath, that $24 billion had been spent.
Right.
That was 5 years ago. It just now is 5 years. So it must be more than 24, right?
Yeah.
So I believe in the average, I'm on the correct side of the thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I would leave it there for now. Thank you for
coming on.
For the dialogue, you know? Yeah.
For now, you say...
Yeah.
No do pray coming back.
I don't think that's bright at all. Okay. Absolutely. All right. Gentlemen.
Thanks for your view.
Thank you, eh?
Yeah.